Lawyers for Wisconsin's Republican-controlled legislature, along with four voters, filed an emergency application to the U.S. Supreme Court calling Governor Evers' proposal for redistricting state legislative maps a, quote, 21st-century racial gerrymander. This is your State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent. And the legislature's case focused on the districts around Milwaukee that included a majority of black voters. Governor Evers' maps increased that number from 6 to 7. An unsigned majority opinion from the U.S. Supreme Court sided with the state legislature and returned the maps to our state Supreme Court. The legislature's proposed map would reduce Milwaukee's majority black legislative districts from 6 to 5. So what do you think about Wisconsin's redistricting process? 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation or email ideas@WPR.org. Patrick Marley is a state politics reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Patrick, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me on, Lee.
So give us some idea of the reasoning that the majority opinion in the U.S. Supreme Court sent back our state legislative maps last week.
Well, federal law is pretty complicated when it comes to how you draw districts and the consideration of race. Essentially, you're not allowed to think about race when you're drawing maps. You have to draw them in a neutral way, unless you're in a part of a state where there is a large enough population of minority voters that they could coalesce and elect a candidate of their choosing. In that case, you have to draw maps to make sure that their voting rights are protected. And so the question here is, in Milwaukee, you know, what parts of the city do you need to be thinking about race? What parts of the city are you not allowed to think about it? And as you mentioned at the top, Governor Evers drew a map that would increase the number of assembly districts with black majorities from 6 to 7. The state Supreme Court selected that map, and the legislators went to the U.S. Supreme Court saying that they took into account the Voting Rights Act in too many cases and needed to go with the state legislators' maps. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court didn't go that far. They just said that there wasn't enough evidence to say that we need to take it to 7 majority black districts in Milwaukee and kicked it back to the state Supreme Court to figure out what to do next.
So the state Supreme Court could still select Governor Evers' map, but it would need at least an explanation?
That's exactly right. They would need to put together all the evidence saying why they thought there needed to be the 7th district. Now, that would be a risky proposal, potentially, because the state legislators have made it clear that if the state Supreme Court does that, they will immediately run back to the U.S. Supreme Court. So, you know, the U.S. Supreme Court has left open this possibility, but they also haven't said that they will just sign off on whatever they do.
And while the majority opinion in this decision was unsigned, we do know Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan dissented, with Sotomayor writing the court's minority opinion, where she called the court's action unprecedented. How so?
Well, for one thing, it's very rare for the U.S. Supreme Court to act in these kinds of cases so late in the game. Our elections are coming up very soon. And, you know, it was not so long ago that the U.S. Supreme Court declined to take redistricting cases because they were close to an election.
And how recent was that decision?
Well, one thing, they did it in, I believe, Alabama recently, just a few weeks before this decision, where they didn't want to address these types of issues. It was kind of cutting in the opposite direction. But they said we're too close to the election to be acting right now. So that's why the dissent sees this as an area that the U.S. Supreme Court shouldn't be going at this time.
Patrick Marley, our guest. He is a state politics reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Patrick, in a separate order, the Supreme Court declined to block congressional maps that the Wisconsin Supreme Court adopted last month. So our state legislative district maps back with the state Supreme Court, but it looks like we do have congressional maps going forward. What effect will these new congressional maps have on the races across the state?
So the biggest change with the congressional maps would be in the first district, which is in southeastern Wisconsin. Brian Stile represents that. That had been, or, you know, under the maps that were drawn a decade ago, a pretty strong Republican district, very solid. It would be an extremely rare circumstance for a Democrat to be able to win that seat. This moves it to a district that is about 2 points Republican in advantage. And so, you know, the Democrats have a fighting chance in that district, especially in a year where Democrats are well situated. Now, that does not appear to be this year. It looks like, you know, a pretty Republican year this time. But sometime over the next decade, if these maps were to hold, the Democrats would have a shot in that district. Now, when I say that if these maps were to hold, it looks like the congressional maps are locked in. It really doesn't seem to be a way for the Republicans to change those maps for this upcoming election. But, you know, do they have another legal fight later or even draw a new set of maps in midstream? Those are two possibilities.
So those that could still happen.
Well, if the Republicans win the governor's race this fall, and they will almost surely hold the legislature, they could say there's never been a map approved that was drawn by lawmakers. We should draw a new map. And so they could take another run at the congressional maps legislatively.
Well, what do you want to know about redistricting? 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest, Patrick Marley from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Patrick, you wrote on Thursday that the fight over redistricting in Wisconsin may come down to the decision of one justice on the state Supreme Court, and that would be Justice Brian Hagedorn. Tell us why he is so critical in this redistricting debate.
Brian Hagedorn was elected in 2019 with the support of Republicans, but he has at times sided with liberals on the court. Excepting Hagedorn, you've got three liberals and three conservatives on the court. And in an early stage in this redistricting fight, the majority of the court said that they were going to make as few changes to the existing maps as possible. That was a big win for Republicans because the existing maps were drawn in 2011. At a time when Republicans controlled all of state government and they have a big Republican advantage. So to say that the new maps will be modeled on those maps sort of builds in a large Republican majority. That decision was a 4-3 with Hagedorn in the majority along with the other conservatives. Fast forward a few months and it comes time to pick the specific maps that will be used. Hagedorn joins with the liberals to choose Governor Tony Evers' maps. And so you have, again, a 4-3 majority, but the majority is completely changed other than Brian Hagedorn. He's the one constant in these two majorities. Republican voters were very frustrated that Hagedorn had chosen Evers' maps. Obviously, the Republican lawmakers were frustrated with that because they went to the U.S. Supreme Court to reverse course here. So now, really, I think it does come down to what Hagedorn chooses. You know, where he views things, he can probably get three other justices to go along with him.
All right. So, Patrick, give us some idea of the timeline here, because as mentioned before, we are, I think, about 2 weeks from Friday from candidates being able to start circulating nomination papers for districts that may not be set 2 weeks by Friday. So what are we looking at next?
Yeah, the clock is very much ticking. You can't take out nomination papers if you don't know where the district lines are to get on the ballot. You have to go collect signatures from voters, and those voters have to live in your district. If you're a candidate, you can't go get those signatures if you don't know what the lines are, because you could, you know, walk up to someone and that person doesn't know if he or she lives in your district or not. So that means we either have to have maps in place by April 15th, which is when those nomination papers can come out, or we're going to need a court order that delays that date. Courts are going to be reluctant they're going to be reluctant to enact maps before they think they have all the information they need. They're also going to be reluctant to push back the voting process. You know, if you push back the date that people can gather signatures, does that mean you push back the date that they can turn them in? That's supposed to be June 1st. We have a primary on August 9th. It gets very tricky if you start talking about delaying elections, which no one has raised yet, but we're close enough in the process. You have to start to wonder if that's an option that courts start to consider.
An option where the courts start to consider delaying elections as we continue to debate our redistricting in Wisconsin. What questions do you have for our guest, Patrick Marley? 1-800-642-1234. We're George in Milwaukee standing by. George, you're on the air.
Hello. As I understand what the U.S. Supreme Court did, it said that the map going from six black districts in Milwaukee to seven took race into account illegally. But what I hadn't realized was that the maps that the Republicans want actually reduces the 6 to 5 seats. Couldn't that logic be used by the Wisconsin Supreme Court to support their choice of maps?
Patrick?
Absolutely. Yes, that's a very good point. I mean, if the first of all, the state Supreme Court has a number of options here, one of which would be to again approve Evers maps and provide more evidence for why they think that it should go to a 7th seat in Milwaukee with a majority Black population. Another would be to choose the Republican lawmakers' maps, which, as you say, takes it down to 5. A third option would be to draw some new set of maps that keeps it at 6, or take a plan from someone else, or come up with their own maps. The justices have a number of choices, though a limited amount of time. If the lawmakers were to again choose Evers' maps, the Republican lawmakers have been very, very clear that they will go back to the U.S. Supreme Court and try to knock those down. If the state justices go with the Republican maps that bring it to 5, you'll have a reaction from the other side, where I think they'll run to probably not the U.S. Supreme Court, but a lower federal court to try to block those maps for the very reason you raise, which says that they haven't invoked the Voting Rights Act for this 6th district.
George, thank you for the call. Patrick Marley, our guest, state politics reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It's your state capitol report this morning, and if you have a question, our phone number is 1-800-642-1234. Our email is ideas@wpr.org. I'm Lee Rayburn. It's the state capitol report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. So this month began with former state Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman urging the Assembly Committee on Campaigns and Elections to decertify the results of the 2020 presidential election in Wisconsin. This is your state capitol report on The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn. And on Thursday, Michael Gableman's own attorney told the same legislative committee that his client's idea was both impossible and pointless, saying, quote, "It's over." And yet here we are. So why do you think Michael Gableman's special counsel probe into the 2020 presidential election results is still ongoing? Take your questions this morning at 1-800-642-1234. Our guest is Patrick Marley, the state politics reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Patrick, where are Republicans on this push for decertification, continued push for the decertification of the 2020 presidential election results in Wisconsin?
Well, the Assembly Speaker and most Republican lawmakers have said they don't believe the idea is possible, and so they have tried to tamp it down. But at the same time, Speaker Voss is the one who hired Michael Gableman, and Gableman is out there saying this is something that the lawmakers should be considering. So there's this intense tension and this push-pull. Timothy Rampton, a member of the State Assembly, is also running for governor, and his main issue is attempting to decertify the election, which, you know, legal scholars, including many on the right, say is just simply impossible.
And at least on social media, it appears that somebody is vying to primary Robin Voss in a Republican race.
That's right. He does have a Republican opponent, and that opponent is someone who is main complaint against Voss is that he says he hasn't done enough to address the 2020 election and taken steps to change how future elections will be run.
Assembly Speaker Voss also said last week that he may rescind subpoenas issued to mayors and election officials as a result of the investigation. I've seen different takes on what this could possibly mean. What's your read on it, Patrick?
Well, there is a provision in state law that says if you are subpoenaed by the legislature, which, you know, there's been a lot of them recently, but this is really rare. Until this round of subpoenas that went out starting last fall, dozens of them. Before that, it had been probably the 1960s when there was last subpoenas issued by the legislature. It's possible some were issued in the 1970s. The record's not quite clear there. But at any rate, it had been decades since subpoenas had been issued. But the subpoenas, the state law says that when you receive a subpoena, that it confers upon you some immunity from prosecution. This is something lawmakers have known all along, and something that they said didn't concern them because they weren't trying to prosecute anyone. Obviously, lawmakers can't prosecute anyone. But as time has gone on, they have raised claims that criminal laws were violated. No prosecutor has come close to agreeing with that. And now Voss says he may want to pull back these subpoenas because he doesn't want to give people who he believes may have committed crimes any kind of protections from being charged with crimes. Now, Voss has been vague. He hasn't said what crimes he thinks people have violated, but he's saying this may be something that he does. And obviously, if they pull back the subpoenas, that effectively begins to end this wide-ranging review they've been doing since last summer.
So it could end the special counsel from the Assembly, Michael Gabelman's investigation, but it could further criminal charges?
Well, it would leave, it would mean that these people don't have any special protections, you know, but you would need a DA or an attorney general to start doing their own investigation and charge someone. And, you know, we the only thing we've seen where anybody was raising the prospect of charges was out of some voting in nursing homes in Racine County, in which critics alleged that the State Elections Commission had violated election laws by allowing the nursing home voting to occur in the way that it did. Three district attorneys have looked at that and declined to issue charges. There's pending requests to two other district attorneys, but no signs right now that anyone's going to view that. Anyone with the ability to charge people is going to view that as a crime.
Let's go back to your calls now and then a question about what you think about Michael Gabelman's investigation into the 2020 presidential election results in Wisconsin and the role that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has played in this ongoing special counsel from the Assembly. You can join our conversation with our guest, Patrick Marley, from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. And in Campbellsport, you're on the air with Patrick Marley. Good morning.
Hi. Well, to stay on your topic, I think the Gabelman investigation is a tremendous waste of taxpayer money. But my question goes back to the redistricting. And I think a majority of Wisconsinites, as evidenced by past referendums, want fair maps drawn by the state. But the state constitution requires the legislature to draw the maps. Going with Wisconsinites' wishes, I'm assuming we would need an amendment to the state constitution to have a bipartisan committee draw the map. How would we go about doing that?
So is your question, Ann, how we get the maps out of the hands of the state legislature or how we can get fairer maps or both?
It's both. I would like to see it out of the hands of the legislatures. Otherwise, we're never going to have fair maps. And I'd like to see it follow the Ohio model where there is a bipartisan committee that draws the maps. But I think we have to change the Constitution to achieve that. I'm not sure if I'm right about that, but how would we go about doing that?
Yeah, Patrick, would we be dependent on the legislature to relinquish their own reins when it comes to redistricting every decade?
Yeah, then the short answer is yes, you would need the lawmakers to relinquish their power. They would have to be the ones to sign off on that. There's two ways you could do it. The lawmakers could just pass a law that hands it off to a commission of some type, that, like you describe, where the lawmakers say, although the Constitution gives us this power, we're turning that power over to a third party commission. States like Iowa have laws like that. Now, there would be a backstop on the end that would allow the legislators to have the final say, most likely. But there has been some success in some states in models like that, Iowa being probably the chief example. The other way, as you mentioned, would be to change the state constitution to create some kind of commission for drawing maps that would be part of the constitution. But to change the constitution in the state, you need the approval of the legislature. The legislature would have to propose the change, pass it by majorities in both houses, wait till a subsequent legislative session, do that again, and then they would send it to voters for voters to get the final say on whether we would change the Constitution.
Patrick Marley, you had an article last week that stuck with me, and I just want to make sure that I bring it up this morning, and it has to do with Wisconsinites with disabilities and their struggle with trying to find a way to cast a ballot in Wisconsin following a 4-3 decision by the Wisconsin Supreme Court regarding who can deliver absentee ballots. Tell us a little bit about this decision and how you found it affecting people with disabilities in Wisconsin.
Yeah, so this is a different issue. The last year, the group, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, with a couple of voters in suburban Milwaukee, sued over provisions of state law that they said weren't being followed. That was the use of ballot drop boxes, which has gotten a lot of attention. And then this idea of giving your ballot to someone else to return for you. You get an absentee ballot mailed to your home, and then you give it to a spouse or a friend or somebody who knocks on your door, and they turn the ballot into the clerk. Waukesha County judge ruled in the favor of those who brought the lawsuit and said that only the voter can return his or her own ballot. They have to return it in person to the clerk, or they can put it in the mail. That case is now before the U.S. State Supreme Court has not issued a final ruling, but it did allow the judge's order to go into effect for this April election. That's this interpretation that you can't have ballot drop boxes. You can't turn your ballot over to someone else to turn in. And in covering that, discovered this issue with some disabled voters. Talked to a man from the Appleton area who doesn't have the use of his hands, and he can't put a ballot into into a drop box. He can't put his ballot into a mailbox. He's caught in this place where he can get an absentee ballot, but he doesn't have a way under this judge's order to get it back to the clerk so that it could be counted.
Patrick, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Patrick Marley, state politics reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Just ahead, we're learning about the past and present and future of the Brown Berets here in Wisconsin. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. This has been your State Capitol Report on the Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.